The Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you, Allie, and welcome everyone to the April call of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Larry Welch from Plattsmouth, Nebraska. I will be presiding judge today. I'm pleased to be on the line today with Chief Judge Frankie Moore of North Platte. She is on our panel, and at this time, Chief Judge Moore, can you hear me fine, and are you present?
I'm present, and I can hear you very well. Thank you.
Thank you. And we were also going to be joined by Judge Francie Reedman. She is from Gretna. She is also on this month's panel. And Judge Reedman, can you hear me fine, and are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line, and I can hear you fine.
Thank you so much. Obviously, we're conducting oral arguments telephonically this month just to make sure that counsel are still connected and that they can hear me fine. Counsel for the appellant, Mr. Alexander, can you hear me fine and are you present?
I am, sir, and I can hear you fine.
Thank you so much. Counsel for appellee, Mr. Parker, can you hear me fine and are you present?
I am, Your Honor, and I'm prepared to proceed.
Thank you so much. A couple of things before we get started here. Number one, even though we normally live stream these, we're not live streaming today, but we are recording these oral arguments and they will be archived. So in the event that you have any sensitive or confidential information, we would ask you to remain sensitive to that during your oral arguments today. Each one of you will still have the normal 10 minutes to argue today. The appellant has requested 2 minutes for rebuttal. As it relates to that, so we don't speak over each other, what we're going to do is this. We're going to allow you to speak to your case for 5 minutes uninterrupted. At the 5 minute mark, I will politely interrupt you and we will ask any questions that we have. And we will, to the extent that you still have 2 minutes for rebuttal, of course, we will give that to you. We'll try not to get into that, but sometimes that's the way that goes. If there's any time left after we ask questions, you can complete your argument. And if there's time for rebuttal, of course, having asked to reserve that, we'll try to honor that. Does anybody have any other questions?
From the appellant's position, Mr. Alexander, no.
Mr. Parker, any questions?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to officially call the matter now. The 10:30. Next case on the 10:30 call is number 19-0472, Grothen v. Grothen. Appellant's counsel, Mr. Alexander, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the pleas of court. This case arises out of an application to modify alimony that was filed in the District Court of Adams County. The trial was held on March 7, 2019. The issue for the appellant is that the district court abused its discretion by failing to modify the alimony award that was given to the appellee. Clearly, the party, such as Mr. Grothen, the appellant, must show a material change in circumstances, i.e., good cause, as the court well knows. In order for a court to determine a material change in circumstances, as the court knows, the court has to look at the financial circumstances of the party at the time of the decree and the time of the modification. To me, Your Honors, financial circumstances mean and it should be based upon income available. I'm sure the court has looked at the income tax returns of my client, Mr. Grothen, Exhibits 24 through Exhibit 30. It's very obvious in 2012 my client had an income of $265,535. His income then continued to go down clear to the year of the application to modify, which was 2018. His income at that point was $4,177 total, with a negative $3,973 on his Schedule F. I would say to the court that the district court in this case abused its discretion in several ways. The troublesome part for me is, one, the district court found that my client should have known that the cyclic nature of the farm economy was something that he should have been aware of, and therefore it was a foreseeable circumstance. To me, Your Honors, that defies logic. There would be no way that Mr. Grothen would be able to know what the future held. It could have went the other way. So I think the court abused its discretion in saying that farm economics being cyclical would be something that Mr. Grothen would be aware of, Your Honors, at the time the decree was entered. That just absolutely makes no sense. I would also mention that my client, Mr. Grothen, testified at trial. There were circumstances beyond his control that he would have no knowledge of, one being the loss of nearly 40% of his land due to no fault of his own. He lost 320 acres of ground that he was farming because the landowner decided to sell it. So that alone would be something he was not aware of back in 2012 when the decree was entered. Additionally, Dr. Seymour testified that there were market pressures on the farm economy, i.e. commodity prices such as tariffs and government policies and abundance of grain in the years that followed 2012, particularly in 2018. Those things would not have been aware of, that the appellate would have no way of knowing about. So I think the court thinking that my client should know what the future was doesn't make any sense. It is my opinion, judges, that alimony modification is determined on the basis of income, and that's what it should be. I know the court looked at my client's net worth and determined somehow by looking at the property statement that was on file, taking judicial notice of that, that somehow my client received a greater share of the marital property at time of decree. There's no evidence to support that. There was nothing in the record to support that, and I think that's an abuse of discretion. And I do think that a modification of alimony should be followed with the idea and the concept, as the case law shows, income only. It should be determined, the modification issue should be determined on the basis of what my client, Mr. Grothen's income was at the time that the divorce was entered and at the time the modification was filed. So a change in circumstances was clearly proved, and net worth of my client should have really nothing to do with the court's decision. The court also believed that my client should have had to borrow money because it appeared to the court that my client was worth $1.8 million. That's what was said on the record. And I don't think that's the purpose of alimony, Your Honors. The fact that my client had a net worth of $1.8 million, which I don't agree with if you look at the total picture here.
Counsel, at this point I'm going to interrupt. We're at the five-minute mark, and I'm going to ask Judge, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you. Mr. Alexander, you're talking about material change in circumstances, but was this property settlement the result of an agreement between the parties?
It was.
So are we looking for, in a modification, are we looking for a material change in circumstances, or are we looking to see if it has resulted in, as a result of fraud, or creates gross inequity?
Well, I think I don't think there's any fraud involved. I don't think there was any gross inequity either, Your Honor. What I think it was a property settlement agreement that really, in my humble opinion, shouldn't have anything to do with the modification. But to answer your question, the property settlement agreement did indicate that alimony should have been ordered and was ordered. But again, my client's income at that time was $265,000. It was less than that, and because I think the record reflects that the 2011 income tax return was what was used to calculate the alimony. So if that answers your question, Your Honor.
Well,
My
question really is, because this was an agreed upon property settlement, when we look to whether it should be modified or not, is our standard material change in circumstance, or is our standard, does there now exist gross inequity because of what has happened with the parties?
Well, I think it has to do with income, in my opinion, Your Honor. I mean, it has to do with the income of the parties and the material change in circumstances that then and there exist. As far as I can see with all the case law, Judge, it's pretty clear that modifications have to do with income, and that's what alimony is about. There's nothing in the property settlement agreement that would indicate to the court that, and actually it's not in the record, but I can tell you there's nothing in the property settlement agreement that says my client should not be able to modify or that it was a part of an agreement to settle property. There was nothing in there that said that.
But was this an agreed upon property settlement? I mean,
yes.
Didn't go to trial initially, correct? It was something the parties agreed upon.
Yes, it was something agreed upon, yes.
And as a result of that agreement, my understanding is your client received the income-producing property. Is that correct?
That is correct, at time of decree.
Okay. And because he received the income-producing property, he was ordered to pay an equalization payment, correct?
That is correct.
And did that equalization payment result in an equal division of property between the parties?
I can't speak to that, Judge, as I was not the counsel of record that handled the matter. So I don't have an answer for you. From what I can see in the record, it looked to me like that was the case. But I can't say that for an absolute certain, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any further questions.
Chief Judge Moore, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you. With regard to your position, Mr. Alexander, that the trial court erred in discussing the cyclical nature of farming, was that solely limited to your client's speculation as to future income, or could that have addressed his knowledge as a farmer of past cyclical, the past cyclical nature of farm income?
Well, I think it had to do with the future, the way I read the order, that basically the judge is indicating my client should have known that the farm economy in the future was going to be cyclic in nature. And I think that standard is something that no one would ever be able to beat when it came to filing an application for alimony, because every industry would have some kind of cyclic type of changes.
Mm-hmm. Were there... Do you know from your review of the record whether the alimony that was originally agreed to was based upon one or more years of your client's income?
Your Honor, with all due respect, I can't answer that because I was not the counsel of record at the time.
Okay. And you're not aware of that from your review of what we have in our record, I take it?
I am not, Your Honor.
My next question relates to your statement that when we look at the financial circumstances of the party, we only look to income. Would you agree that financial circumstances can be matters beyond the income of the parties, including property?
At the time of the decree, that would be correct. The case law, that's, as I review it, talks about who received the income-producing property, who got the bulk of the property, but that's at the time of the decree. All the case law I had and I cited in my brief had to do with an income stream and what that party's income would be after the original decree was entered into. And if you look at this, judges, you know, the purpose of alimony, obviously you know, is for one party to serve to support the other party. Again, income. Alimony is not used to equalize incomes. Disparity in income or potential income may justify an award of alimony. All the cases seem to talk about income and income only. I won't dispute that there at the time of the decree, the judge can certainly award alimony based upon who got the bulk of the property or, in this case, the income-producing property. But after that, it's income stream only that I can see. And that's the cases I cited, Your Honor.
Chief Judge
Moore, I have no further.
Is there anything further that you would like to inquire?
No, thank
well,
you.
Judge,
I have no further questions.
Okay. And Mr. Alexander, we are past 10 minutes, so there will not be time for rebuttal. Allie, how much additional time was afforded Mr. Alexander?
1 minute and 38 seconds, Your Honor.
If you would please add that on to Mr. Parker's time. Mr. Parker, are you ready to commence?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. I think that our strongest argument here is unclean hands, and I'd like to address that first. Judge Illingworth didn't spend a great deal of time on the doctrine of unclean hands, but I think we've clearly established in our brief that the doctrine of unclean hands will operate to bar the modification of an award of alimony when one of the parties filing the application, as we know, has not satisfied an existing support obligation, and the failure is willful. I'd like for the court to note that Mr. Grothin was actually found in contempt of court on December 28th of 2017 and was ordered by the court to pay $30,352.46 within 75 days of that date. 102 days later, on April 9th of 2018, he did pay the $35,000, he made a $35,000 payment. But at the time, he was in arrears $40,546.58. That argument appears actually on page 15 of our brief. So at that time, on April 9th of 2018, he was in arrears $5,564. 10 days later, having not made a payment toward his alimony, he filed his application to modify. So I fear that he clearly came to the court without failing to satisfy his existing alimony obligation and came to the court with unclean hands. Also, as the court's noted today, and one of the judges mentioned, this was a consent decree. And of course, the court's well aware, the law on consent decrees is that they are awarded greater force than ordinary judgments and ordinarily will not be modified over the objection of one of the parties. Of course, I'm citing the Nebraska Supreme Court on that. I think one of the judges also noted today that at the time of the divorce, and Judge Illingworth noted it, it's in the record that the husband had a net, or out of the marital assets division back in 2012, got all of the income producing assets and mostly farm ground and equipment. He had $1,991,000 in assets. The wife had $128,000 in assets. I was her counsel at the time. It was a consent decree. The court can clearly tell that an equalization in that case would have been about $931,000. The wife did accept a $600,000 equalization payment at that time and agreed to the $2,500 a month in alimony. I think it's really important that the court look at the appellant's income, exhibits 24 through 27. As I added up from 2012 through 2015, off these income producing assets, he made $739,328 if I add the years 2012 through 2015 income from his tax return. The wife, on the other hand, had $30,000 in alimony that was paid in 12, 13, 14, 15. She was down to $15,000 in alimony in 2016 and $2,500 in alimony in 2017. Further evidence, in my opinion, of the appellant's unclean hands. So I'm kind of curious as to what happened to that income. Of course, $700,000 worth of income between 2012 and 2015 that he had. The court will note from exhibits 39 and 40, the appellant's financial statement on September 15th of 2012, which was just a few days after the consent decree was entered, he showed his bank. He had a net worth of $1.5 million roughly. And exhibit number 40 on April 10th of 2018, he had a net worth of $1.8 million. And that's, of course, after he had made the $600,000 equalization payment to the wife. I think it's important to note, and I think I'm probably running out of time, but Mr. Alexander really keyed on the fact that the appellant has had a decrease in income. Nobody's going to argue that. But as we argue in our brief, specifically on page 19, contrary to that argument, when comparing the financial circumstances of the parties in an alimony modification case, a court is not limited to looking solely and exclusively at each party's income alone. In addition to the statutory criteria, a trial court considering whether to award alimony is to consider the income and earning capacity of each party, as well as the general equities of each situation. We know about the wife's health. We discussed that in our brief compared to the husband's. Also, and I'll try to wrap it up because I think I'm about out of time.
Well, I'm actually going to get Mr. Parker, we're at the 5-minute mark. Judge Reedman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Parker, you had addressed a little bit the issue of the fact that this was an agreed upon property settlement. I'll ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Alexander. What are we reviewing for here? Are we in a modification? Are we looking for a material change in circumstances? Or are we looking to see if now that agreed upon settlement results in gross inequity?
Your Honor, I don't know if I'm right on this, but I'm going to opine that it is a material change in circumstances, but it is a consent decree, and it's awarded, of course, greater force than a judgment entered by a court. There is probably one material change here, the increase or the decrease in the payee's or the payor's income. But every other factor in here greatly outweighs that. And I think he came to court with unclean hands.
And just for clarification, your client's financial status, other than receiving alimony, has not changed. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually stayed about the same as it was at the divorce or gotten worse. If you look at her tax returns, her health has deteriorated since the time of the decree. She had 6 surgeries since the decree, had 100 infusions in 2016, and in 2017 and 18 had more health problems, and that's detailed in our brief, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any further questions.
Chief Judge Moore.
Thank you. Mr. Parker, you referred to case law that said we're not limited to looking at income when considering the financial circumstances and any change. I realize there are cases that say that in regard to the initial award of alimony, but do you have any cases where that proposition has been applied in modification cases?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I believe that the cases we did cite in our brief were cases when the court was initially determining alimony, and that's a good point.
Thank you. My last question is with regard to your argument that an equal division of the assets at the time of the divorce would have resulted in a higher equalization payment, but that your client agreed to a lower one. Is that information contained in our record somewhere?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. It was in Judge Illingworth's decision. He noted it in there. I don't have, I'm sorry, specific reference to direct you to that, and I think I addressed that in my brief, and I don't know if I have any specific sites. I'm flipping through it, Your Honor, looking specifically for that. We did address.
Well, we obviously can look again.
Yeah, we did address what the husband and wife received, and looks like we did refer to specific exhibits. I'm trying to look here at pages, the property settlement agreement, and I believe we did refer to that, Your Honor, in our brief.
Okay, thank you very much. I have no further questions.
And I don't have any specific questions, but you do still have a couple of minutes left. So if you'd like to resume, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. One other thing that I was going to mention is, as we mentioned in our brief, it appears on pages 17 and 18 and over to 19, the husband still has income-producing farm ground. He continues to farm despite the fact he no longer makes a profit. But we noted and we gleaned it from his testimony what the fair rental price was for farm ground and how many acres he had an ownership interest in. And we computed on page 18 of our brief that he could earn $61,600 a year off farm ground rental without having to work at all. So his ability to pay the existing alimony arrearage was obviously clear from that, too. I think he can have $61,000 a year in income off the income producing farm ground without having to work at all. With that, Your Honors, I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Parker. And as I noted earlier, Mr. Alexander, you did your 10 minutes. So take the matter under advisement. It is now submitted. Once you hang up, counsel, you will not be able to rejoin. But because we have to get on to additional matters, I would now kindly ask you to disconnect. Thank you both.
Thank you
for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.